For last week's programme, I was in Castletown Bear hearing from fishermen about the difficulties they were having with the tie-up scheme. That's the government's COVID-19 aid package to compensate trawlers if they have to stay in port during the lockdown. This week, Noel Sweeney has been to the coast of County Clare to hear how fishermen there are getting on. This is his report.
I'm meeting with two members of the West Clare Lobstermen's Association to talk about their lives in fishing and, of course, how the coronavirus has affected their businesses. First stop along the West Clare coast is Seafield Pier to meet Tommy Galvin. Tommy has been a fisherman for 40 years and today he works a 12-metre boat for lobster and crab. He says he's fishing to about a 50% capacity due to the effects of COVID-19.
At the moment we've been selling to a buyer in Connemara. Prices are way down on what they should be. There is no market for crab. The lobster market is very limited and we have been selling a little bit door to door, so to speak, but that's a very limited market. It won't go for a week or two, but then the novelty wears off. You don't hear from those people again. Irish people don't eat fish or shellfish generally, so that's the problem. You'll find that if you go on holidays or people go overseas, they tend to eat fish a lot more than they do at home.
Did the opening of the farmers' markets make any difference to your sales at the moment?
We do not. We don't do the farmers' markets. With the live product, it's not easy, and we're very weather dependent where we are. We have to try and work on 100 days a year. So to get, if a day is fine, you need to be at sea rather than inland doing something else. You have to try to work around the days we get. Being on shore is in a fine day doesn't make sense.
A lot of your own tools and all that are idle today. Can you just give us a walk around the boat and show us what you would ordinarily be using?
In the wheelhouse you have your navigation equipment, the plotter, and you have your sounder, fish finding equipment, and that's basically it. Once you're on the ground, you're using your pot hauler to haul the pots aboard, and then the crew will sort through the catch. And these days we throw away more than we keep.
Why is that?
Well, that's a good thing because we have, over the last number of years, 15 years or more, we've been V-notching lobsters, the large female lobsters in particular. And they're like a brood stock in the industry and they continue to breed. And they are the best producers. The larger females are the best producers of eggs and the best eggs that have the greater chance of survival. So that has boosted the industry and it's the only thing that's been keeping it going, really, I'd say. It has improved, there is no question about that, especially here along the Clare coast where a lot of V-notching is done. We V-notched the female lobsters and they're put back into the fishery and cannot be taken. It's illegal to have them. That has saved our industry. Apart from that, I don't think there would be anything happening.
Very little happening today here in this port, but, you know, we had a little conversation earlier and you said it wasn't always that way.
No, this was a very, very busy pier there in the 80s, and when we had good fisheries, we had, I suppose, the Spurdog fishery was the last big fishery we had, and that slows down. The salmon fishery, that slows down. We can't catch bass. We have bluefin tuna swimming up on the shore almost, and we can't touch those. So our options are limited. If there is a bit of whitefish to be had, it's a race between you and the seal, and the seal is a better swimmer than I am, so he usually wins that one.
Fishing isn't the first thing to come to mind when you think of Clare. How many fishing ports will be up and down the coast?
We have no harbours. We have no harbours in Clare. This is probably the best one, and we're tidal. That's why this boat has a draft of just over 3 feet, about a metre, that we can access the pier at half the tide. So that's... You know, there is no place to keep a trawler. We have the Kerry boats and the Cork boats and the Galway boats and Arden boats working these grounds successfully. But you just cannot keep a boat in this county. For winter time, if there's bad weather, I have to go to Kilrush, which is a 5-hour steam. There isn't a safe harbour here. There doesn't seem to be a marine policy with Clare County Council. To get anything done in the pier is... next to impossible at the moment. We don't have power on the pier, we don't have water on the pier. And at night time, in bad weather, you just tie your boat to the pier and God is good for the morning.
Travelling south, I head to the coastal village of Cargaholt to meet Jurgen Cannon. Ger began fishing in 1973 and has seen huge changes in Ireland's fishing industry. Carrigaholt was once home to a bustling fishermen's co-op, which closed down about 18 years ago.
Fished here always. We fished cod, hake, haddock, all that. The seals made a job of all those. At the time, there was up to 30 boats fishing out of here. We had our own co-op here. That's defunct now.
When did that wind down?
I'd say we're talking maybe 18 years ago, you know. So that's when that wound down. Fish just weren't there to keep the co-op going.
A little village like this would have felt that?
Oh yeah, this village was kind of dependent on fishing at the time. You know, the co-op was hiring, there was a manager there full-time, there was a secretary there full-time, there was drivers, and, you know, they were buying fish from other places. We also had salmon, they were dealing in salmon sales and other types of fish, lobsters and crab and all that. But now there is only a handful of boats here, and just most boats have their own buyers, so they just sell to a particular buyer all the time. You know.
And it's the lobster and crab that's remaining from that now?
Lobster, crab, and we fish shrimp from, say, October until March. Now, we finish usually around February because we get ready for the lobster season, which is usually starts around St. Patrick's Day by us. In the start of March. So the last time we sold a fish off this boat was the 6th of February. 46 and a half kilos of shrimp, according to my book, and we haven't sold a fish since.
So that was before the COVID-19 restrictions?
That was before the COVID-19 restrictions, yeah. I mean, we didn't know there were restrictions going to come into force. It didn't make any difference anyway, because the shrimp season was due to finish, because it had been slack this year. And you get those circles or cycles of shrimp. You get a good season and a bad season. So this just happened to be poor enough. But we were getting ready to go lobster and crab fishing. All the pots ready up at the back of the house and still there. Birds are sitting on them all the time. So that's what we're at now at the moment. I can't see us moving for another while yet, you know. There is no market there for us. We have no markets. And price of lobster is poor for this time of the year, so we just leave them there and they can breed away for another while, you know.
You're availing of the 350 COVID payment, and but you think you'll opt into the tie-up scheme for June and July?
Yeah, we're getting the payment for maybe the last 4 weeks or so. If it wasn't for the payment, I presume we would be fishing. More than likely, the way the market is for us, we probably will opt to tie for June and July. Hopefully we'll be back at sea again by August. But as it stands, the pay-up scheme has kind of helped us, and we appreciate it, you know. We appreciate it.
Is it enough?
Well, it varies. People can say different things, we appreciate it. It's helpful, and we're grateful for it, you know. I wouldn't like to say that it isn't enough, because it keeps me going anyway. I mean, I don't need much at my age. It's easy to keep us going, but maybe for people with loans and things like that, it's a different kettle of fish. I mean, this boat is paid for, so.
Are you looking forward to getting back?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Especially with all the fine weather we've had for the last 5 weeks, you know. I presume if we were fishing, the weather would be blowing a gale, but it's unusual to have it so fine this time of the year.
Thanks to Noel Sweeney in County Clare. We enter the next phase of the easing of the lockdown next week, and that will affect how you'll go sailing and get on the water. Many summer events have already been cancelled, but there's hope that some can be rescheduled and run on a smaller scale later, maybe in August. Harry Herman is the chief executive of the Irish Sailing Association, and he told me today about how sailing is planning to get back up and running.
So we have a return to sailing scheme that we have published, which outlines the five phases based on the government's roadmap. It is a fluid document because obviously the government roadmap is changing, and there's a lot of clarity around that we need before we can actually confirm exactly what we can and can't do through the phases. So phase one was very much a let's just get back out in the water and have fun in single-handers or in household crewed multi-handed boats. That's phase one, so we're just coming out of that now. So for next week, hopefully based on the Taoiseach's announcement, We obviously, the travel restrictions will be lifted to 20 kilometres from 5, which is good. And we're also suggesting that if you can sail in a multi-hander with mixed households, if you can social distance on the boat, i.e. if the boat's big enough for you to do that, obviously in a non-competitive environment, then that would be fine. And we're also increasing the group sizes as well. So the government roadmap says that small group team sports training, but not matches. And there's an expert group for sport who have clarified that that means a small group is 10 participants. So that's 10 single-handers or 10 people on multi-handed boats. And it's also non-competitive. So we're still very much doing sort of basic coaching or race training or supervised sailing and a little bit of training.
Would that be for the more elite groups or the people who are in serious training rather than your casual junior sailor?
No, I think, I know a number of clubs are planning to bring some junior sailing back in phase two under these guidelines. And they've put some very comprehensive plans together around that. So our whole philosophy for returning to sailing is based on four key principles. So we're looking for compliance with whatever the current restrictions are at the time. We're looking for people to take personal responsibility for their own safety and for their own compliance, and for event organisers to do likewise. Self-help is a key part of this, so that the last thing we want to do is have to ring the emergency services for help. So we need to make sure within our activities that we can help ourselves in the event of the unexpected. And then the last thing is the risk assessment, which every club and centre, and in fact every sailor, does almost subconsciously every time they go afloat. So, you look at the facilities you have, you look at the activities you're providing, the types of equipment, the experience of the sailors, and then you add the COVID-19 restrictions into that risk assessment as well to help prevent the spread of the virus.
One of the big issues, or probably the biggest issues a lot of clubs will have, is the issue of junior sailing courses in July and August. Do we know what's going to happen?
So again, on the risk assessment basis, every organisation is different. Every club has different size, different facilities, different sailing areas, different launch facilities and so on. So there's no one size fits all for junior sailing. And what the clubs have been doing is to develop their own plans and return to training on a limited basis. So, they've been giving advice on, what are the limitations? Are they going to limit the numbers that are taking part? So instead of having 100 people on your course, you might just have groups of 6 or 12 at a time, reduced numbers. Are you going to do fully accredited training activity, or is it about getting people out sailing and enjoying themselves and upskilling certain skills in a supervised and controlled way? How do you manage people when they arrive at the club? Are they changing in advance? How do they check in with social distancing?
Will somebody be able to help them rig up their boat if they're very young?
So I think the general consensus amongst the clubs, again, through the risk assessment process, is that they would need to be able to rig themselves or rig with their household support. So, if their parents are with them from the same household, then obviously they can rig the boat together. But certainly the interaction between instructors and students is obviously going to be limited with social distancing. So the risk assessment, again, has to take that into account. The decision to go afloat, the experience of the sailors who are going afloat. So I think most of the clubs are looking at taking the more advanced courses out in the early phases, and then hopefully towards the end of the summer, in late July and August, we might see slightly lifting of restrictions, and it'll be easier to take the sort of beginners out or the less experienced out. There's an awful lot for clubs to take on.
And they're decisions that clubs themselves have to take.
Yeah, yeah.
What about events? I see a couple of clubs are trying to get some of the major events they might have had over the summer, getting up and running on a smaller scale later in the summer.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously the big challenge for events is social distancing. We are told that club racing can resume in phase three. Exactly what that looks like just now, we don't know. In phase four, we know that GAA and soccer are coming back, for example. So there has to be some kind of protocol around how those sports return, because obviously they can't comply with social distancing while they're playing a match. In phase five, we've got full contact sports coming back, rugby and boxing and so on. So again, there has to be some protocols. We're currently working with the expert group, which is made up of department officials in Sport Ireland and some of the sports representatives, on how sport can return and balance the risk of again of the integrity of the sport against the risk of spread of the virus. So that's the work that's going on at the moment.
Would you be hopeful that some of the events around the country, say some of the classic boat events that they have in various places, might be held later on in August?
Yeah, I would hope so. You know, certainly phase four, as we say, when rugby and soccer are back, whatever the protocols are in place for those sports will also apply to sailing. So the anticipation is that there will be some way that we can crew boats again with mixed households, whether that's with the same crew going out every time or whether that's an exemption for sports matches for the duration of the match, or in our case, the event or the race. I don't know what those what those protocols will be, but there are examples in other countries who are back already sailing in fully crewed boats. So we're currently looking at those countries and seeing how they're doing it, measuring the impact on the spread of the virus based on their activities, which is the advantage we have, because we can look around, see what other countries are doing and learn from their experience. So that's the work that's going on at the moment.
And finally, are elite sailors, the people who had hoped to compete in the Olympics this year, they're back training?
They are, yeah. So those who are within the 5 kilometres at the moment are training. We've had to move them around a bit to make sure they can comply with that. As of phase two, the elite sailors, which are the carded Sport Ireland carded sailors, they can attend the Performance HQ in Dunleary, and all the elite sports, if you like, are allowed to break the 20-kilometre. Social distancing, or the anticipation as they will be in the Taoiseach's announcement this evening. So, it's been frustrating for all the elite sporting athletes insofar as they've watched their counterparts around Europe opening up and start training, and they have still been, a lot of them have been unable to get out and train themselves. So that's welcome news for next week.
Harry Herman of the Irish Sailing Association. And if we can all get back on the water sometime soon, some of us might try the Shannon Waterway. It's an amazing resource, but not without its problems. Here's our regular contributor, Hugh Orr.
The eternal question of draining the River Shannon remains, as it has done for centuries, the most intractable problem in the saga of Ireland's inland waterways. Over and over again, along sections of the river, severe floods have been a constant feature, with a host of remedies proposed, but no permanently successful solution has ever been devised. The Shannon is widely regarded as rising in the Shannon Pot on the slopes of Coolcar Mountain in County Cavan, where the river begins life as a small trout stream. From the Shannon Pot, the river flows into Loch Allen. It flows on through or between 11 of Ireland's counties before reaching the Shannon Estuary at Limerick. One divisive issue is the actual length of the river. The length of the river depends on who you're talking to, so there's quite a variation. The traditional length of the River Shannon was put at 390 kilometres, while more modern sources generally say that it extends for 360 kilometres. this particular distance is that between the Shannon Pot, where the river rises, and a line between Kerry Head and Loop Head in the Shannon Estuary. Some academics have given the Shannon an even shorter distance, 280 kilometres. But if its total length is accepted at 360 kilometres, which is the most generally used figure, and this gives the Shannon the status of being the longest river in either Ireland or Britain. Curiously, this fact has been recorded in Irish history since the 12th century, although in one strange anomaly that century, the River Shannon was mapped as flowing out of the south of Ireland rather than the southwest. For about half its length, the Shannon is a freshwater river, while the estuary is, of course, tidal. Apart from being Ireland's longest river, the Shannon is also Ireland's largest river by flow. By the time that the river has reached Athlone, in the very centre of Ireland, the flow rate is bigger than the total flow of all other Irish rivers, excluding the River Corrib in Galway. The Shannon has also been connected with major historical events. Over 1,000 years ago, the Vikings were using the river to raid monasteries that had been built in central Ireland. And after Oliver Cromwell had conquered Ireland in the mid-17th century, many Irish landowners retreated west of the Shannon, where they were largely impregnable. At the end of that century, both Athlone and Limerick were the subject of very destructive sieges. But while the Shannon has always been such an historical river in Ireland, it also suffers from being extremely shallow. In many places, the river is only half a metre deep. And for the first 250 kilometres of its journey, the Shannon falls a mere 18 metres. In 1835, due to the big increases in both passenger and freight traffic on the river, five commissioners were appointed with the task of improving navigation and drainage. However, there was one problem they failed to solve: flooding. Since most of the riverbank along the length of the Shannon is flat, much of the land surrounding both sides of the river is and still is very prone to flooding. In the early 1860s, there was disastrous flooding along much of the length of the Shannon, and it took years for the floodwaters to drain away. That problem of flooding has continued right up to the present, with little respite. Nearly 4 years ago, the then government set up the Shannon Flood Risk Group. This largely came about because of widespread flooding along the course of the River Shannon through the Midlands. For many years preceding the setting up of this group, little or no work had been done on dredging the Shannon, so big quantities of silt and vegetation had built up but were never cleared. By the end of 2016, the draft Shannon Flood Risk Management Plan had been put in place. The Office of Public Works started planning for strategic maintenance works to be carried out, while at the same time the then government earmarked €430 million for flood risk management efforts to be carried out between 2016 and this year. At the time of those floods 5 years ago, many areas along the length of the River Shannon, as far downstream as Corbally and Limerick City, were flooded. In total, around 100 flood victims living beside the Shannon applied to the Department of Social Protection for access to food, water, clothing and temporary accommodation, and a large number of companies also applied for government relief. One of the problems created by the nature of the river is that it's a slow river in hydrological terms, meaning that floodwaters along its banks can take a week or more to clear. A fifth of the entire country actually drains into the River Shannon. So, despite all the relief work carried out over the past few years, one thing is almost guaranteed right up to the present day. Any excessive amount of rainfall, especially in the Midlands, ensures with almost absolute certainty that once again, as so often in the past, the River Shannon will make its mark with yet more floods.
Hugh Orme.